Good evening, listeners, brave navigators of the enigmatic and the concealed. Have you ever felt the pull of the unanswered, the allure of the mysteries that shroud our existence? For more than a decade, a unique comic publisher has dared to dive into these mysteries, unafraid of the secrets they might uncover. This audacious entity is Paranoid American. Welcome to the mystifying universe of the Paranoid American podcast.
Launched in the year 2012, Paranoid American has been on a mission to decipher the encrypted secrets of our world. From the unnerving enigma of MK Ultra mind control to the clandestine assemblies of secret societies, from the awe-inspiring frontiers of forbidden technology to the arcane patterns of occult symbols in our very own pop culture, they have committed to unveiling the concealed realities that lie just beneath the surface. Join us as we navigate these intricate landscapes, decoding the hidden scripts of our society and challenging the accepted perceptions of reality.
Folks, I've got a big problem on my hands. There's a company called Paranoid American making all these funny memes and comics. Now, I'm a fair guy. I believe in free speech, as long as it doesn't cross the line. And if these AI-generated memes dare to make fun of me, they're crossing the line.
This is your expedition into the realm of the extraordinary, the secret, the shrouded. Come with us as we sift through the world's grand mysteries, question the standardized narratives, and brave the cryptic labyrinth of the concealed truth. So strap yourselves in, broaden your horizons, and steel yourselves for a voyage into the enigmatic heart of the Paranoid American podcast, where each story, every image, every revelation brings us one step closer to the elusive truth.
What up, beautiful people? This is the Paranoid American. If you don't see me, I'm down here in this corner. And today we got my homeboy, Chaz. Yo, what up, Chaz? What's going on up there, homie?
How's it going? Hold on one second. The dog is losing his mind. Give me one second.
So he needs no introduction, and that's good because he's not here to give it. Chaz of the Dead is someone that I met a while ago on the Reality Czars podcast. Shout out to Nate. And Chaz is somewhat of an expert in a few different paranormal realms. So first of all, let's take him out of the window. He'll come back up. He's creeping back in.
Hi. There was
I was giving a quick introduction that you're a man of many different talent. I just learned something new about you before we started here. But I met you on the Reality Czars with Nate, and you were kind of talking about haunted houses and UFOs. And so, first of all, where can people find you, like websites and social media and all sort of, you know, props up front?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on all the social medias at Chaz of the Dead. You can find my appearances and stuff at chazofthedead.com, though I think that needs to be updated. And then you can find most of my writing over at ParanormalityMag.com, Paranormality Magazine, where I do all kinds of research and organize the issues and stuff that they put together. And so if you like all kinds of high strangeness, whether that's Bigfoot, UFOs, or ghosts and goblins, we like to cover a little bit of everything. So that's kind of what I do. I travel around and do some psychedelic experiments and talk to witnesses and try to make some sense out of this strangeness when I can.
So it's funny you brought up the psychedelic right out the gate. So I can't remember exactly where this was from. It was like an old conspiracy theory coloring book from, I don't know, like early 2000s. It was like a jokey type thing. And there was this one page and it was like, we've got UFOs, we've got aliens, we've got Bigfoot, and we've got political conspiracies. And it's like, can you connect the dots? And when you connected them, it was just like a big pot leaf, you know what I mean? But it was a good it was a good joke because it does tend to be the glue that binds between all these different, you know, paranormal aspects. So I mean, right out the gate, I'm curious, what do you think about like the role of psychedelics specifically in paranormal research? Because it seems like there's a huge overlap, and I don't, like, do you think it's necessary?
Oh yeah, well, I definitely think it's an interesting question, because I'm gonna go in here and you might come away being like, oh well, he sounds pretty skeptical overall. Because right out the gate, you know, that is the explanation of most skeptics, right? Okay, you saw something paranormal, you hallucinated. You had some kind of hallucination, and that's the explanation. And as someone who's willingly hallucinated multiple times, they have a point, because there is absolutely a list you can draw up of similarities between the paranormal experience, whether it's, you know, any of these subgenres, and the psychedelic experience. I mean, you have the obvious glaring ones, missing time. That's one I've had on mushrooms before, where I thought I was staring at the wall for maybe 2 minutes and 3 hours had passed. And
are you hallucinating right now by any chance?
No, I just got off of work. I might be
okay, so you've got a baseline.
Okay. No, I try to actually keep my psychedelic experiments for the field these days, because when I was a little bit younger, I was doing them pretty gung-ho, one after another, or weekend to weekend, and there were some negative health effects. Definitely, you know, be careful out there.
What do you consider the field? Like, when are you like, okay, I'm on the clock now, I can take, you know, I can take some
That's time. A very good question, because 90% of what I do is actually sitting at the computer researching. It's that 10% where I've either found a story or a location or something that requires that physical follow-up, you know, just to be in the presence and in that area. And then if it checks out that second kind of vibe check, then, you know, and that vibe check can include, you know, are there park rangers stationed nearby? There's a variety of factors that go into,
you know, how friendly are the paranormal and the normal.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes I'm traveling abroad and access to substances can be limited and things like that. And so a lot of factors go into it, but more often than not, after testing it out a couple times, doing your traditional normal ghost hunting stuff, I'll go back and conduct a more psychedelic based experiment. Whether that's a heavy trip or a light dose, it kind of depends on the scenario, because I've kind of tuned it to see that, you know, different investigations warrant different kind of an approach. But this notion that the paranormal experience and the psychedelic experience, they are very much akin. Missing time, viewing of strange worlds, right? People who are abducted by aliens and taken to these far off lands, these impossible landscapes. Anyone who smoked DMT will report something similar. You have this one I find super interesting is the emotional reaction. You tend to get one of two emotional reactions to both psychedelics and paranormal experiences. And this helps to think of alien abductions, particularly in this case, right? So a lot of people abducted by aliens, and they come away with this sense of, well, yeah, it was against my will, it was in the middle of the night, but it showed me that there's a bigger universe out there, and I feel one connected. There's this, they're here to help us, and this universal love and peace is one of the most common reported factors. And then on the flip coin, you have, you know, your Betty and Barney Hills, where they're terrified. It's a non-consensual experience. They're getting their shit diddled. And it's horrifying by these terrible creatures that smell like sulfur. And, you know, it sucks. And that's really interesting, because that's pretty much the two reactions you have when people take psychedelics for the first time, right? I mean, the majority of people have a very, well, not the majority. It's hard to put a number on that. But a large percentage of people have that oneness, you know, that's almost a universal aspect of particularly mushrooms and peyote and some of the more natural psychedelics. But I'm not going to be one of those guys and sit here and say mushrooms is the answer. Everyone needs to take mushrooms, because I know some people who've taken mushrooms and it was not for them. You know, you can have that exact opposite reaction, that absolute terror. This is the worst experience I've ever had, and I don't want anything to do with it. I never want it to happen to me again. And so that dichotomy very much exists within the paranormal experience as well. Even Bigfoot, you have that those two versions of him, right? You have the lovable goofball Bigfoot who like
the Harry and the Hendersons Bigfoot.
Yeah, he wants to steal your peanut butter and man. He's fun to take on a family vacation. And then
he might stand up to a bully for you. Yeah.
Well, and then you have the ones that are terrifying, the glowing red eyes, and he like tears up the car and leaves these deep scratches. And you know, again, it's this dichotomy. And there's a few other more minor ones. In my first book, I wrote a full list. I think it's like 7 or 8 of these key experiences that are the same in the paranormal as with psychedelics. Now, the difference is from a hallucination, because I've had plenty of those, and something that's paranormal is physical crossover, right? Because what happens, what's different between a UFO case and a Bigfoot case and just, you know, taking mushrooms in the woods, is that there's a physical imprint, whether it's scorch marks or in rare cases of abduction, implants. Bigfoot, he likes to leave footprints and, you know, again, these impressions on the land. And there's this physical aspect to it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that these things are entirely physical, but that, I think, is the marker of, you know, a true paranormal experience. And while a lot of people will just be able to write it off and say, well, you know, it sounds like a hallucination, so it must have been that. They're throwing out the baby with the bathwater in that scenario. And so the goal here is to, I guess, examine the connections between the two phenomena. Because, you know, there's kind of an awareness that it's there, but it's either used to completely dismiss it, or it's used to, you know, I guess I'm the one using it to say, hold on now. It doesn't dismiss it. It actually validates these sightings in a strange way. You know, our reality is, and anyone who's taken psychedelics knows that our reality is a lot more malleable than, we tend to believe on a day-to-day basis. And so understanding those strange mutations of reality and how they can affect the populace in a physical way, I think is very much worth studying.
You mentioned like willingly, like, so like you're used to willingly, you know, having these hallucinations and going on these. And that was one of the differences too, right? Between these two. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious if, like, would you willingly get abducted by an alien as well? Or would you cross the line? Would you say, like, if absolutely, it's going to enter physical reality? Oh, okay, so you'd raise your hand for that. Would you be the dude on the top of the building, like, welcome to Earth, you know, from Independence Day?
Get obliterated?
Yeah, well, you don't have to know that part.
Just maybe not necessarily spoiler alert. That part.
By the way, spoiler alert, the people that greet the aliens usually get blown up.
Yeah, spoiler whatever, alert for the whatever movie you're watching. Movie. you know, the entire point of these experiments is kind of egging it on. And that's kind of been my approach from the get, right? And I've always find that as a interesting dichotomy, especially in the ghost hunting world, right? Because there's all these big no-nos, right? They're like, don't do this, don't do that. Ouija boards or, you know, upside down cross, whatever it is. And my whole perspective going in, you know, initially in that ghost hunting kind of background was, well, wouldn't you want to do those things? If these are the bad things that will make a activity happen, then what are we doing here? That's what we want. We want to be able to, hell yeah, to do it. And it's this idea that, and again, I get it all the time, you know, it's dangerous, especially from the religious people. It's dangerous. Yeah, well, you know, so was exploring the Northern Passage, you know, but people still had to do it to get to fucking find it. And so just because something's dangerous doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. It's like saying, oh, well, don't study tigers. They're dangerous. You're going to get hurt. And so we should just ignore tigers forever.
Like, don't antagonize the tigers. But yeah, I also see an analogy here where the people that are like, you know, don't disrupt the ghost, here's the rules, they're the ones that are like, you know, maybe take half of this pill the first time, and you just walk in the room and you like grab a handful and you're just like blip, blip, blip. Yeah, you're like, hey, what are we doing here if we're not gonna do this?
I'm ready, let's go for it. And so that is an extreme example. You know, I don't necessarily want to be one of the several hundred people who was eaten by tigers before they managed to like capture one. But I like to equate it more as the field of the paranormal is very much the we're in the alchemy stage, right? Where, you know, there's alchemy was a bunch of weirdos making up words in the dungeons of castles, mixing sludges together. But now, hundreds of years later, you know, uranium isn't a made-up word. It's an actual thing, and we can visualize it and know its, you know, abilities and things like that. And so I do think the paranormal, one day it will be called something totally different, you know, alternate reality studies or some shit like that. Who knows? It'll be chemistry. What chemistry is to alchemy now, if you were to go back in time and try to explain it, they would kind of see what you're saying, but they'd be like, oh shit, what the fuck? We're in that scenario here. We're the alchemists. And so it is going to take a lot of, you know, guesswork and experimentation that is, you know, on the fringe aspect of it. Which, you know, is not going to be the most productive, but lucky for me, it also happens to be the most fun. I'm glad I'm not a paranormal investigator 200 years from now where you have to like go to school for it.
Get licensed.
So, yeah, a fucking 8-year degree and then an apprenticeship. Yeah, fuck all that. I get to take drugs in the woods, haunted houses and shit.
I like the idea of antagonizing ghosts to like for the not because like I'm an asshole to the dead, right? Mm-hmm. But it's because if we're out here ghost hunting and we're out here to see paranormal activity, why not be a catalyst? Why not stir something up? But and I'm curious, does that apply to like demons? Would you like invoke a demon and start like talking about its mom?
Well, let me put it this way. I'm never going in it from that kind of like Zach Bagans perspective where like I'm convinced I'm going to talk to a dead person or a demon or whatever. I have a much more universal consciousness, kind of White Lodge, Black Lodge, if you're a Twin Peaks fan, kind of perspective on it, where these entities, they're as complex as humanity is, whatever they are. And I find giving them names like demons and things like that falsely empowers them because, you know, a lot of demons just start out as like a spooky noise. And then if you start putting your belief into it, if you're like a Catholic schoolgirl and you're really afraid of the devil and puberty and whatnot, you're going to like start manifesting this kind of experience. This, the human mind certainly meets the phenomenon to a certain perspective. And I think that's what is reflected by the similarities between psychedelics and, you know, the paranormal. And I do think this was kind of, unfortunately for us now, this was known by a lot of the societies of the pre-colonized Americas. Shamanism was a very common aspect of life. And I've always found it really interesting that we accept it now as modern people that those shamans were the doctors of their community. They absolutely could heal people and do things, you know, what we would consider the most, you know, medically advanced. It's hard to be a doctor. That's clearly a science, right? But then they have this whole spiritual side of their practice and we're like, ah, that was all nonsense. And I really do think we lost a great deal of understanding on what these, you know, again, entities is still a strong word because even that doesn't necessarily pan out. There's this concept that based in Carl Jung's shit of the collective unconscious and that perhaps ghosts and demons and these things are a type of pareidolia within the collective unconscious. So, you know, say someone passes, you don't even have to die. Every memory or story or idea exists not only in our head, but in this non-physical neural network between all human beings. And again, we see this in fish and ants and lots of wolves. This isn't a far out there concept. And so the idea is that perhaps if you're looking at this web of information, disincarnate information, your mind's going to do what we do always when we're looking at like static or the stars. It's going to do a pareidolia. It's going to find a pattern. And so we start cherry picking little pieces of information. And you can see this in every single ghost hunting show ever. If they do EVPs, most of them are nonsense, right? It'll say a bunch of random words or whatever. And again, that has to do with the technology. That technology's made up bullshit. But it's an accurate representation of what might be occurring with the collective unconscious and this idea of hauntings. It's, we look into this mass of webs and we find all the details that match with it being a demon, or all the details that match with it being a ghost of a Civil War soldier or whatever. Again, one possible theory. I try not to buy into one theory wholly one way or another. Every day I wake up, though, and I do believe one more than another, and it's a constantly shifting battle.
You said something that was a little bit sacrilege within the ghost hunting community. Oh, yeah. And like, you're taking jabs at the technology. And I mean, if you're spending $200 on $30 worth of parts, then you're going to be pretty biased and think that your technology is working. Right. So I'm just curious, is there any technology at all that you think is legit when it comes to ghost hunting, or is technology incompatible with trying to detect this other world?
No, I actually think that what they're doing is just one step behind what I'm doing. I get it, because I said this on a YouTube documentary a couple months ago. They were asking, you know, we're doing this kind of ghost, a group of podcasters were going on their first ghost hunt. And I told them that when I go out in the field to do paranormal work, and if I'm with a ghost hunting group, because, you know, I like to hang out, I always approach it in my mind that we're not hunting ghosts. We're not going to a place and we're going to like corner them in a room and get them in a bag, and, you know, capture it like it's Ghostbusters. What we're actually doing is what I like to call a technological seance. And these tools, and there's something about, and this goes into like the rules of like hypnosis and a bunch of weird shit, but there is something about spending a bunch of money on shit. It's the same thing that cults do, right? You put in a bunch of money and then you don't want to admit it's bullshit because then you wasted your money. And so it locks you in psychologically. And the same effect, I think, works with this kind of technology and applying it to this. It locks you in. I tend to think most ghost hunts that have a lot of activity are more like your 1900s seances, where it's kind of like a party atmosphere. It's everyone's having fun and maybe telling spooky stories and getting spooked out. And then,
well, that's one of the rules of Ouija, right? Is you never do it alone.
Right.
So by its very rules, it has to be a social thing.
Yeah. And I think that, again, the fact that that is a well-recorded aspect through now 120 so years, more so back to the Fox sisters, 150 years of paranormal research, which again is alchemy. This all could be thrown out at a later date, but as from where we're standing currently, that certainly suggests that there is something to the idea of the collective unconscious having a role here. And it's the same thing. You can go to Casadega here in Florida and they'll do a table tipping service for you, where you all put your hands on the table and it starts to like dance and move around, and like a traditional 1900 seance. And I personally haven't done one yet. They're kind of overpriced. It's on the bucket list. I'm going to make the magazine pay for it. But I've had plenty of colleagues who have gone down to do it and say it's a genuinely bizarre experience. It absolutely feels like something is controlling the table beyond you. And it's the same, again, the same principle with a Ouija board. I tend to lean to the idea that's why I'm not necessarily worried about like offending a ghost or a demon or whatever. I tend to believe that for them to appear at all, they need me to meet them halfway. I need to start, we need to work together. It's a group activity. Very much like the Philip experiment and some of the follow-up ones they did in Australia, where they manifested a tulpa or an egregore, whatever your preferred terminology is, and got this very much real result.
I'm curious, this is kind of related to that. Do you think, this is a common question that I try to get in different ways, someone's completely brand new to this whole world, right? Like they just found out about seances and spiritualism today. They escaped from some kind of atheist cult that didn't let them talk to the outside. You know, it's the village. Mm-hmm. They get out. They're fascinated by it. Do you think that it's possible for someone that fresh to just like go on Amazon, order a bunch of books about how to do seances, how to contact Bigfoot, how to contact aliens, and just through reading books be able to successfully do it? Or do you think that you have to have some like innate ability, or do you have to be on some kind of wavelength? You have to like train like Miyagi style to become like a paranormal expert? Like, what do you got to do?
Again, I think it's one of those scenarios where it's probably different for every individual. That being said, yeah, go buy some, like, if you're interested, buy some books and try it out. Like, you'll surprise yourself with some of the
any books you recommend.
If you're looking to particularly have some weird spiritual psychedelic stuff without taking any substances, I highly recommend Prometheus Rising by Robert Anton Wilson. I'm a big Wilson fan. And that one, again, every chapter has a little experiment at the end of it. And if you do all of the experiments, I'm telling you, weird shit starts. It works. Weird shit absolutely happens.
Yeah, I actually have an example from that, but one of my favorite examples from that one, and I think because it has such an easy rational response, but it was something like, for the next week, you're gonna look on the ground and just see like a $5 bill or quarters. You're gonna find quarters. And you end up finding quarters. And I think I found like a $20 bill. And I'm not even kidding when I was going through that. And it's not that I guess some people might argue that you're manifesting the money by looking for it. But you could also just rationally explain away like, well, I normally don't look for quarters. And now that I'm just constantly looking for them, I'm finding them every once in a while. But that's one of my favorite ones from that book, because like it's like, oh wow, this is doing something different.
It starts to fuck up your day in a fun way. You're like, fuck, again, another quarter. It starts to get weird. And it's interesting, I've had positive versions of that occur. There was this one instance where we were traveling cross country. We were in a desert in Arizona, I believe, miles away from anywhere, and man, we needed to smoke a spliff. It was been a tough day. The AC was wrecked in the car, so it's hot, and like the dog's whining, and so we pull over and we're at each other's throats because we're so agitated, and you know, we need a smoke. That's where we're at. And I walk out a couple feet into the desert, no cars around, nothing, middle of nowhere. We had just been visiting this ghost town, Calico, very weird place, but, and right there, pack of Marlboro Lights, my brand, completely untouched, was just sitting in the middle of the desert. And it was one of those, I was like, huh, well, thank you, universe, looking out for me. What are the fucking odds of that? But
it's funny that the universe wanted you to have brand name cigarettes at that point.
They know me better than give me some fucking Senecas.
Give them that natural light crap, right?
But also,
that's the beer, but whatever. You know,
I have a spookier version of that. Is when I was a kid, I was right at the time where Slenderman had just dropped. And it was that phase where everyone was making those YouTube videos. And
is this like 2004, 2006? Is it after that?
No, it was after that. It was, it was, I remember because I was 18, I think, when those two girls stabbed the other girl for Slenderman, and they were about 14. Damn,
spoiler alert.
I was,
if anyone hasn't been paying attention to Slenderman, I guess the two girls end up killing someone at the end.
It's a good one. Check out the story. Okay. It's bizarre. But I was, when it first dropped, they were late to the party. I remember that happening. I was like, who believes in Slenderman anymore?
That's but so old school. Yeah.
When I was around their age, it had just dropped 2011, 12. It was just at the turn of the 20 teens, I believe, maybe even 2010. But the something awful forums contest, the guy made it and it spread like a wildfire on like 4chan X and Reddit and all that shit. So it was very much in vogue at the time. And, you know, being a kid, you don't get much sleep doing all homework and getting up early to walk to the bus and stuff. And so I, in the twilight hours, was getting real paranoid with some Slenderman stuff. And I started to find these little QC stickers, quality control stickers with the little numbers on them. And at the time, I was a kid, and I was like, what is up with all these weird little numbers? It's just like the notes and all the Slenderman things. Like, it's all added up, and I started seeing them more. Now, as an adult, obviously, I know those QC stickers, they put on shit, shoes and whatnot, with a little number. No big deal. But I remember I had collected all those QC stickers at that time. And this was only a few month period. I had like nearly 100 of them. And nowadays I might find one or two a year, but I had this whole stack. And again, it was a kind of a nocebo version of the quarter thing where I had gotten into my head. I had connected it with this urban legend and this symbology. And it started, you know, to manifest more and more. And so when it happened, when those two girls ended up, the story was they stabbed their friend a bunch of times as a sacrifice to Slender Man. Happy ending. The girl survived. She's okay. But it was
relatively
strange.
Okay.
Relatively. I mean, you know, no one's okay. They're all traumatized. And I think the two girls are in hospitals for a few more years. But again,
we can fix all them.
These psychological explanations, the folie des trois, the, you know, idea that they bring this up with the Columbine shootings too, that, you know, two people start to play off each other and this weird dominant sub role, and they end up leading to this weird violent expression. But I do think there is something to this idea of thought forms of, you know, a mental contagion, I guess. But again, I hesitate to use that word because it has that connotation. Because in the case of Slenderman, obviously that was a bad. But if you're just looking for quarters, you know, you're going to have bus fare for the rest of your life. That's pretty fucking good. So again, these things are never simply, I think, or rarely black and white. I guess there are some odd instances in the paranormal realm where you could say, yeah, it's pretty fucked up. But most of them have a positive flip side of that coin. There's a head to that tail.
Slenderman's a great example here because it feels like a newer generation's version of Bloody Mary. In a way where, you know, you'd stare in the mirror with like a candle and the lights off and say, you know, Bloody Mary three times, and then that turned into Beetlejuice maybe. But Slenderman is kind of, you know, the non-boomer version of Bloody Mary, right? Like what are the rules of Slenderman? Do you remember?
God, not really.
Can you just conjure him, or does he just show up?
I remember it from a video. No, he shows up. He wants to kidnap children or whatever, and so there was a video.
Oh, he's working with the Clintons, you mean?
Collect notes. Yeah, no, he's in on it. Ironically, I think there is something that is one of those elements. I think if you attach it to something, it helps feed whatever it is, whether you're QAnon or Slender Man. Throw missing kids in, and it takes a notch of seriousness it adds to it. You know,
you better not joke about it now, bitch.
Oh yeah, you'll get canceled.
So where, I mean, I'm really curious on the Slender Man in particular. Is Slender Man real because he became real through just aggregor / thought form / people putting energy into it? Does he become real because people believe it so much that they make it real in their own heads and then act accordingly? Or is there like an objective reality where you could be like, yeah, dude, if you use this special laser sensor thing, and you know, like you can see him and he's definitely there? Or is it like thinking?
It's tough to say. I tend to think that, I heard a great analogy once. It's kind of like asking, is Batman real? Well, no, but there's also comic books, costumes, paraphernalia, toys, movies. Like, he certainly had a real impact on reality. And there's definitely been people who've dressed up as Batman and tried to fight crime. I mean, there's a whole subgenre of TikTok of weirdos walking around.
Batman's a good one just because he's technically not a superhero. He's just really rich, right? He just has infinite resources.
Well, again, one of those details that helps feed the mythos. if you craft your mythos well, it can take on, I think, this reality that is not necessarily physical, but certainly real, you know, like Batman, where he's not necessarily physically real, but he is real. And I think there is a lot of, who's the comic book author who's, I think it was the Constantine guy who said he's met Constantine in real life. He like met him in a cafe, like bumped into him, and he was so like awestruck that it was literally the guy he'd been drawing and writing and like down to the details on his face.
And when he manifested him into reality, or that like he had just been writing about him because the guy actually existed, or what?
Exactly. Who knows? Maybe both. I think something where both of those are true in a weird reality. Who knows?
So I want to segue into a fun little segment here. And it's just to get a temperature check on where you're at on a bunch of different variety of topics. All right. So the rules are pretty simple. You're just going to give things a rating from 1 to 10, 1 being, you know, that's bullshit. And 10 being like, oh yeah, I'm all in, you know, pull up a chair, I'll convince you too. Right. So if you're on the fence or you don't care, or you've been flip flopping on something, then that's an obvious 5.
Okay. I got you.
All right. Are you ready? And there's not a set number. I'm just going to do a few until we've got some fodder, and then we'll do some follow-ups based on what you say here.
Cool.
Did we bury Osama bin Laden at sea in May 2011?
There's no evidence to it. So I'm going to say 0 bullshit. I think that's bullshit.
Are dinosaurs real?
I'm gonna say like a 7. Yeah, like probably not as real, not how we think they are, but yeah.
Okay. How much do you care about Hollywood striking?
Not at all.
0.
0. Okay.
How real do you think celebrity clones are, like Jamie Foxx, for example?
Ooh. Well, maybe not that example, but
Michael Jackson. That's another popular one.
I'm going to say maybe a 6, because I think there's some things about that has some merit, but not gung-ho for it by no means.
I want to know your phone right now. If you were to turn it off completely, what's the chance that it's still recording you and sending your voice off somewhere?
Oh, 100%.
Okay. Does gold have some kind of magical or special properties? Beyond
5.
The ones that we're aware of. 5? Okay.
I'm going to say 5. I don't know enough about that one.
Is there actually some sort of underground secret or some other, you know, conspiracy going on at Denver International Airport? Or are they just leaning into it?
Ooh, that one's a good one. I mean, it's an airport. Shady shit has to be going down. I'm going to say a 6.5. Maybe
okay,
a 6.
Okay. I like these scores, man. I like them a lot. Do you think the Earth is flat?
0.
0 on it being flat. Okay.
I don't think it's flat.
Did mermaids ever exist in real life?
Ooh. Ooh. That's a good one. Ever exist.
Yeah, did, like as we know of them, right? Like a half human, half fish.
Half human.
They would like fish. Lure sailors because they were smoking hot.
See, I think the idea of a siren exists today in the woods as a skinwalker. If we're talking siren, I'm saying 10. If you're talking half fish, half woman, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to put it at like maybe a 4.
Okay, that's respectable. I think, on a side note, I think that maybe there was just some really horny sailors and they were just making excuses for like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, dude, were you banging a fish last night? Nah, bro. It was like half.
It was a lady.
Yeah, dude. It wasn't weird. It wasn't
what happens at sea stays at sea. You know what I mean?
It was only half weird. It was only half. Do you think Walt Disney's body or head is cryogenically frozen in case they can bring him back to life?
I grew up with that one being true. So I'm gonna say yeah. I'm gonna say 7.
How much do you trust cryptocurrency?
2.
Do you think the CIA intentionally flooded pop culture with psychedelics?
Ooh, this one is one that I'm well versed on both sides. I'm gonna have to say 7.5. They did.
Was Shakespeare a real person?
I have a very specific perspective on this. I think Shakespeare was the first modern instance of a writer's room where it was like 6 or 7 people coming up with that shit.
Okay. I'm curious. Well, we're going to get into that one in particular. And then so,
don't know where I'd put that on the number scale.
And then, we landed on the moon.
Oh, that one I'm gonna have to say 6 because there's a bunch of sketchy shit, but also there's you can see it like the stuff. It's up there. We got telescopes to look at it.
Okay. I wanna go right to Shakespeare and the writer's room because I guess the most conventional one that I'm familiar with is Manly Palmer Hall cited this and a whole there's been movies on it, but that Francis Bacon perhaps was the actual William Shakespeare, but if Francis Bacon was involved, that. Then Francis Bacon probably had like a whole bunch of his homeboys in on it too, right? Like they were sharing like an Instagram login amongst each other and like pretending it was one person.
Yeah.
But who's in the writer's room? I'm curious.
So that's a good one. Francis Bacon, I imagine, was maybe would be credited as like a producer. Like he might have been a writing producer a little bit.
Okay.
He might have had some influence in there.
He made sure that like this guy showed up and got in town at like the right time and like this guy
there's
showed
some
up
themes that are a little propaganda-y here and there and stuff. You know, they want to make sure it's intriguing, but it's not gonna incite a riot, you know, that kind of stuff. It plays well. And so there's you know the common one of the conspiracy is that Shakespeare couldn't write or read. So how did he write all the fucking plays? He could have said it to somebody, but also that person probably took some creative influence on it too. And so I think there's actually a really good skit. I want to say it's Mel Gibson's History of the World, where they do a Shakespeare and like they're in like a room and they're all doing blow.
Mel Brooks.
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson's History of the World actually got canceled.
Would be totally fucked. I would love to see it.
Rothschilds are behind everything.
Mel Brooks. And he's like, pitch it to me, pitch it to me. And the one guy like pitches Romeo and Juliet and he's like, boom, Shakespeare. Love it. I think that's probably, close to it, where it was a squad of people and they just, for marketing reasons, they just went with the front man name.
So I want to know about the moon. You gave the moon, I want to say like a 6 or a 7. So you're implying that we've actually been to the moon, which I happen to agree with you on. And these aren't trick questions or anything, which is somewhat controversial in, I guess,
controversial.
Paranormal. Because now you're buying the government story, you're buying the official story. My favorite rebuttal, I guess, is just that I don't think that the moon landing footage that was broadcast and the phone call to Nixon, I don't think that was real. So I do think that the government faked it and lied about it and pulled a huge propaganda piece. But I also think that maybe we actually did still go to the moon. We just didn't have proof, and it would have looked stupid to not have proof of it. But you know, where are you at on this? Like, do you think that any of the footage was real? Do you think that a human being has stepped foot on the moon, or it's just been robots, or what?
Well, there's definitely shit up there that we put up there. That's my perspective. Because you can, again, there's high powered telescopes that can take a picture of the moon surface, and you can see like a little, it looks like a lander, and you know, a couple other specks and shit. And there's another experiment where you can bounce, they've left the reflector plate so you could bounce lasers off of it, you know, depending on the time and location. And again, I think all that, you know, that kind of astronomy and shit, people have been doing that since the fucking Greek era. So I think I trust when amateur astronomers look up and say, yeah, I see the shit. I trust those people. Absolutely. Now,
you don't think those are NASA hologram projections?
Well, again, everyone's been able to land a rover up there, so it doesn't necessarily mean it was manned.
Allegedly.
But I tend to give them the benefit of the doubt on that one. You know, I've been to Cape Canaveral and seen a bunch of this shit. It's a pretty good, if it's a ruse, it's a pretty good one. Especially since other nations around the world have been imitating it, you know, spot on, pretty close.
Well, just yesterday, I mean, well, this is, you know, right now it's August 24th, but I think like a day or two ago, India just, you know, basically landed something on the moon. Do you believe that? Do you believe that they legitimately?
Well, the computer graphics they showed everyone are not doing them any favors.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's like run on a Nintendo Switch or something.
Well, maybe they just don't have great, you know, animators that we do at NASA. Yeah.
Yes. Bullshit though. I'm on Fiverr. There's Indian dudes whipping out animation.
That's true. No, that's true, man. They cheaped out on Fiverr when they put an ad up for like government work, must land lunar around moon.
Again, I think there are really weird details, like the original tapes being missing. That's super sketchy.
Oh, they were running out of tape. They had to reuse them. What do you want, man?
Fucking lost them. Sorry, guys.
Record over the most somewhere. Monumental achievement in human history. You know, someone needed Garfield reruns.
My other favorite one is it like the Danish ambassador? Someone they sent a moon rock, and this cheeky fucker got it tested, and it turned out to be fossilized wood.
It's about looking a gift horse in the mouth. That's awesome, though, man. That's why you're supposed to look a gift horse in the mouth. That's the exact reason, because they usually give you the horse with the bad teeth. That's where that saying came from.
That's funny. But yeah, there's some weird shit. Again, maybe that's just it's fucking the government. Maybe they just mislabeled that shit. You know what I mean? Like, there is always that argument of like incompetence that comes in here and there when it has this conversation, and it's a stickler because anyone can believe that to be true. Like, it's a bunch of idiots in the government and they fucked the thing up. Okay, yeah, we can all buy that. We're all constantly victims of that every single day. So it's not a hard sell, but it is also kind of a cop-out. You know, there definitely should be accountability when it comes to these things, because it does lead to wider implications. You know what I mean? If you don't think the moon landing happened and you think all NASA's fake, and then now you're living on the flat earth, my friend.
Now you're skipping on the firmament.
Slippery slide. It's a sticker up there. That's all it is.
And speaking of the government screwing things up, you pause a little bit on whether or not the CIA intentionally, you know, injected psychedelics into pop culture. And this one is in my boring mind, this is like a highly controversial thing too, because in some, I won't, maybe it's a minority, but some people are like, well, the CIA is essentially the one that introduced LSD and maybe even mushrooms through Gordon Wasson. And we'll get into that in a second, but like, if they hadn't done that, then maybe the psychedelic movement never would have happened. And therefore, and there's that conspiracy part, and therefore, you know, psychedelics are bad because the CIA wanted this to happen. And if they wanted it to happen, then that means then it's like a bad thing. But you could also just say, like, maybe it just slipped through. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. Or I guess, in my opinion, they were just trying to get ahead of something that they knew was coming and wanted to get as much research done covertly as possible before, like, you know, the control basically escaped from the lab. Because yeah. Once it gets in pop. So where are you at on this particular subject, being familiar with psychedelics?
So through my understanding of it, and again, my understanding of it is that it is a controversial subject, because the psychonauts, very divided, especially over the battle over Timothy Leary. Poor Leary.
Where are you at on Leary, dude?
I think he was good guy, bad guy. I think, yeah, that he got some of his drugs from the government, and that's sketchy, but I do think that he was being genuine. That being said, I think the reason the government was supplying him and others, I think Manson got his shit from them as well, was because they were doing what they did with the fucking cocaine in the 80s. They infiltrated that shit. And so the point of the CIA is to collect information. They're not there to shut, they're not law enforcement. They're not there to shut anything down. Their job is to embed themselves into these networks. And so you have an illicit substance, and that means, you know, millions of dollars that you can potentially, you know, just put in your pocket. You know, what's the Barry Seal guy from the fucking Tom Cruise movie? That all happened. Bill Clinton's Arkansas was a dropping pad for
Mina. That was Mina, Arkansas.
Hundreds of thousands of kilos potentially of cocaine, and again distributed to the inner cities. I think they were doing the same thing with the hippie movement in the 70s, and they were distributing it to the universities, to the people on the streets. They were one of these main functions, one of these main cogs in this machine, and that was their job, to be in on all of this and collect all the information. And it's what I think happened with Jeffrey Epstein. I think that's what he did. He was a human trafficker that worked for the CIA. He was embedded in global human trafficking because he was getting paid by the government to be there. There was a whole, they knew what he was doing, and they were probably most likely sharing shit. And that's why they covered that up. It's just a normal function of, we tend to put higher, you know, like, oh, it's, you know, the Illuminati and shit. But I think it's just normal functioning military intelligence. That's just day-to-day shit. And the reason particularly I feel that with psychedelics is because, again, most of these are rooted, besides LSD, almost all of them are rooted in plants that grow here in the Americas naturally. You know what I mean? There's not any, even if the government wasn't involved, people would have still been picking mushrooms and taking them. You know what I mean? It's just part of our human culture. We don't exist separate from these things. The synthesis of these drugs into compounds and the particular ones that appear in certain locations at certain times is highly suspect. Clearly, they've done some research and they are involved in that kind of aspect. You know, they definitely were giving Manson some bad shit and seeing what happens. You know what I mean? And so it's a 7.
That's honestly a great slogan that the CIA should pick up. Contact me, I'll give you the rights. Let's see what happens. That should just be their slogan, right? Let's just see what happens. We're not here to enforce the law.
Yeah, they're not the fucking FBI. And again, the FBI's job is to bust shit, and they sometimes just don't. You know, we know that for a fact, that they fuck up a lot intentionally and unintentionally. But the CIA has no such, and the NSA, they have no such responsibility. They're simply an information collecting network. And
it's such a funny dynamic too, to bring up on that. And I always see the FBI are almost like those stock traders on the floor that have been coked up for like 4 days straight. And like, they should probably sell. Like, it probably hit its peak, but they're all like, I don't know, man. Like, if we just hold on to this a little bit longer, maybe a little bigger tragedy will happen and we can get like bigger, yeah, shinier toys out of this.
You or know what we mean? Can manufacture one. Again, they know all the information. They're in the spots to make those decisions.
So what's your opinion, because you're in Florida, that why are, you know, psilocybin mushrooms still illegal right now to cultivate in the state of Florida in 2023? Why is that still illegal?
Again, I think you're going to see that as a side effect of our, you know, dual two-party system. You know, anyone, we're in Florida, and we're in a pretty red Florida at this point. The gerrymandering's gotten us kind of away from that purple Florida. You know, and the Cubans have gotten more conservative too. Well, let's not kid anyone. they've also started leaning that way as well. But the political system, if you say you're going to legalize any drug specifically here in Florida or the Deep South, they're going to say you hate the cops, you're light on crime, you're not tough enough. And that's it. That's all it really takes for these people, these fucking,
well, right now they're trying to lower the THC limits. They're like, your weed is too strong. Make it crappier, man.
We're just fucking haters, dude. I miss the old libertarian, like, Republicans who are in there, man. They're fucking.
I dream of the day, man, when, like, we just get a new governor and he's like, welcome to the new Florida. Come to Disneyland. Get high. Trip. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Eat some mushrooms and smoke some weed and go to Disney Alice World and Universal Studios. Land. Yeah, dude. Yeah, I mean, California's got it. Why can't we?
Yeah, probably some legal reasons, but
potential
lawsuits there. But again, I think people, yeah, there's the idea that you can regulate people on anything they put in their bodies, whether that's or out of their bodies, vaccines, abortions, whatever it is, the government shouldn't be telling you what to do. We're all individuals that should have our... There's no part in the Constitution that says we own your bodies unless you were black, and we got rid of that part, and that was a good thing. All right, so no, let's not take any step back in any of that shit. That's my.
Where are you at on like natural psychedelics versus like a lab created psychedelic? Like, is there any difference to you to actually getting ergot from, you know, rye and then processing that, versus just starting with a precursor and developing it yourself, like in a garage?
So I have a positive feelings towards both for different reasons. I personally prefer like a peyote button or a mushroom cap. That being said, dosage is not a thing when you just do it fresh from the source like that. And I think that's part of it. I think that's intentional. I think your psychedelic journey is supposed to be individualized like that. Now, for research purposes, having like a dropper and being able to like calculate exactly how hard you're going to trip is also super beneficial. So it kind of depends on the scenario. But if I'm my go-to, I would prefer, you know, I like a good mushroom tea. Now out of the synthetics, I do have a favorite. It's alyescaline. It's a mescaline derivative. And I love to take that and go to museums. No weird, anxiety because normally when I'm tripping balls, you know, you're like, everyone can tell, you know what I mean? You always have that little paranoia goblin on your shoulder, like,
well, they probably can because, like, you're sweating and your eyes wide open. You're, like, hyper-aware.
For whatever reason, on alyescaline, you just don't give a shit, man. You're just fucking vibing. The visuals are great. the pure mescaline, though, hard to get. I would probably go for that over it if it was more available. I think, you know, do your research. But I think you can order alyescaline on the internet. It's not restricted here. think it's one of those designer ones.
Is there like a promo code? Is there like a Chaz?
Oh, I fucking gotta get one of those, man. Dude, that's a great idea.
AliEscalin.com.
Hook that up.
Are there any that you're like synthetic weed's a big one, right? Like K2 was huge in Florida, and they had Bayou Blasters and stuff. You have any experience with that?
I've never had a K2 experience. I've smoked some weird, questionable blunts. I do have a habit of when I out drinking, I'll smoke a blunt with a homeless guy.
Do you look specifically for homeless guys? You're like, yo, you got a blunt?
They seek me out, man. It's the I don't know if it's the hair or what.
You remind me of me when I was your age, son.
Yeah, there's a whole thing to it, but I'm well known around this area, Gainesville. I'm nice to the homeless; they recognize me.
So I think the last time I talked to you, I was like kind of kidding around, but also kind of not kidding around. But there. And correct me if this wasn't you, but there was like a haunted doll somewhere in Key West.
I still haven't done that yet.
And you said that you've also never done salvia, and you were like, bro, let's do salvia and just haunt this little haunted doll. Yeah, man.
It got hard to get because they did end up banning that one, I believe.
Nevada. So if you go to Nevada or know someone in Nevada, it is still completely legal from what I understand. There's a handful of states still. Georgia, I think, might even still be legal.
Am I looking into that? Yeah, it's also one of those ones no one's fighting hard for though, because
sucks.
It's not like a fun one by most.
It's not, and that honestly, that's why I think it's so important. That one in particular. Uh-huh. Because it's not a fun one, because it doesn't attract someone that's like, I'm going to bring this to the party. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go and cry in a dark closet for like 40 minutes and and just like completely detached from reality. But I think, I don't know, man, I've got my own opinions on that one, but I think it's one of the ones that people should care about and they don't.
Yeah, no, again, all of these substances, I think, merit, you know, further research beyond the, you know, as much fun as I'm having, there should be scientists doing this for sure. And you do. You have Straussman in the UK doing like the long drip DMT experiments, which again, I'm not really sure how productive those are. Like, again, it's hard to say, but it's an effort. You know, who knows?
Do you think that the human body synthesizes DMT? That's another controversial thing in the psychedelic world, because some people believe like when you're born you get like an initial dose of DMT, and then like right before you die your brain's like, oh dude, take this trip on your way out, it's the only way, you know. But from what I understand, like, no one has definitively proven that the human body is even capable of just synthesizing DMT by itself.
Yeah, well, there's definitely the release of DMT. Definitely is. It's the common explanation for the near-death experience. Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I don't know. It's hard to say. I do worry. I try not to do DMT often. That's one I definitely won't use for research, because again, you're just like locked there. You're blasted off. But also because I do worry, like, if you do too much of it, maybe that last death hit sucks. Like, even if it isn't, let's take out the whole spiritual idea that it's your blast off to the, you know, other side or whatever, and just say it is just a nice little thing before you die. What if you're like burnt out on DMT? And it's just like your like fourth.
Like, yo, is there any DMT more? Trip. Is that it?
Yeah. Like, it's.
Can you give me a triple here?
Your death moment is like just mid compared to your other fucking trips.
They're like Chaz, get ready. You're gonna cross over. Here's exactly 0.5 grams of some dried psilocybin, and you're like, what?
What? I can fucking see a shape if I'm lucky.
So, all right, I got another. This isn't like hot seat stuff. I'm curious, like, where are you at on pyramids and aliens and Stonehenge and Coral Castle? Do you think that there's architecture on the planet right now that you can go and visit that only exists because some supernatural or like alien beings helped construct it?
Oh, dude, I think that there is a elaborate conspiracy to withhold a separate branch of technology that has existed with humans. And I think it's human-based. I think it's based on nature, observation in on our planet. Maybe the aliens helped us out. Probably not. Again, aliens as in like people from other planets, very little evidence that anyone's fucking traveling with like gasoline all the way here. The math is very difficult on that.
Really? So what about like the Greys and, you know, all the Roswell, and you even brought up Barney and Betty, right? So
right.
Some of the theories on Barney and Betty is that they originally said it was the military and then they changed their story and said it was aliens. And do you believe in any of those particular stories that, like, so, you know, again, high-tech UFO aliens?
I think absolutely there is this idea that abduction experience, it mirrors, you know, the fey folk being spirited away. Again, that's absolutely part of the human condition. It's been with us forever. Whether, again, that occurs entirely psychedelically, partially physically, partially psychedelically, or entirely physically, all room for debate on all of those. Now, I do believe, especially in some of these cases, Betty and Barney Hill in particular, but some of other abductions as well, that the government might be mirroring that on purpose. To what ends, I'm not quite sure, but there is some great research. There's this great book. It's not Russ Kohlhart. It's about someone in the listener's comments. Send the answer to this because someone's going to know. It's about cattle mutilations, but his theory is that it's the government doing it because they core out the anuses and the mouths, because that's how you test for bovine pathogens. It's a way of making sure, like, you know, a foreign country's not poisoning our meat supply. And so they go out and do it randomly in these UFOs every once in a while. And they kind of mimic this. And it does sound crazy, but there's a very true anecdote about how in the 50s, when the first fighter jets were being piloted, they made the pilots wear like gorilla masks and suits. And that way, if anybody saw them getting in and out, or, you know, in an airliner saw this thing zip past, they'd be like, there was a fucking gorilla driving a plane. Yeah, there was a plane like I've never seen before. It would totally discredit the sighting. And that was the logic behind it. And we know they did shit like this in the 50s. Same time, again, 47 was Roswell. So I think there is this understanding that they play with. And the CIA is actually the highest paid, if you're an anthropologist, the highest paid gig you can get is with the CIA. And it's to like study people and cultures and things like that, because again, gathering information. And so how are they using that information? Well, they might be tricking us into thinking aliens are like right around the corner, they're coming close. I think there might be something to that idea.
Well, there's been some waves of disclosures recently, right? So do you think that this is ramping up to that?
Yeah, every wave makes me more suspicious that it's not aliens, for sure. And so there might be some bias in me coming out there. But the bulk of my research that I'm going through right now, I'm putting together in hopefully a book coming out soon, maybe. I don't know, I can't put a date on it. It's been years in the making, but it's coming together. But there does seem to be this alternative mode of physics that is understood by select groups of people, potentially various governments, and they are absolutely happy to let us think it's aliens while they play whatever weird Cold War chess game they've got going on. And it's I personally call it bee theory because I was exposed to it first by this crazy dude in Morocco who told me very nonchalantly that, oh yeah, I know people who fly UFOs. Yeah, no, UFOs are based off honeybees. There's an anti-gravity chamber thingy in their thorax or whatever, and they reverse engineered that, and that's how UFOs work. And he like said it like that, very nonchalant. Older American dude living in Morocco. There were some weird things about him, but such a crazy story. At the time, I had like written it off. Like I didn't even bother writing about it for my WordPress blog. It was at the time, you know what I mean? But years and years later, these little details keep popping up where that guy was fucking on to something. I don't know if he was, you know, entirely there, but he certainly was on to something. And through my current research, it seems that it's, well, I call it bee theory because of the bees, and it's a fun story. But the more accurate name is probably superfluid theory. And it's this idea that there is a universal superfluid. And this concept of superfluid, it's science. So I'm going to fuck it up. My explanation is not going to be entirely accurate if there's any quantum chemists listening.
Oh, there are. This interview is actually exclusively for quantum chemists.
Good. I need your feedback. But this is close, but there's been three Nobel prizes awarded to this superfluid research. And it all involves helium, and specifically, I believe helium-3, which when you cool to this specific temperature right above absolute zero, it's like 0.1246, that exact number. It does this weird thing. So the normally gas helium, when you get it cold, it becomes a liquid. And right before you get it to absolute zero, it enters this superfluid state. And you can watch it on videos. It literally just falls through the bottom of the container. It phases out through the sides of the container. And interestingly, it rides up the side in this weird gravity-defining way and kind of like mists out the top of the glass as well. And it's because at this temperature, the particles are vibrating the same as all the particles around it. And so it enters this weird quantum fluid state. And again, Nobel Peace Prizes were awarded throughout the 1900s for research into this specific phenomenon. And it kind of just died off. Even the videos you can look up of it today mostly are like black and white. Like no one's doing it publicly in a lab anymore, which... suspicious. Superfluid hypothesis suggests, and this is again scientists suggesting this, not just weird UFO people like me, that if there was an element that was naturally a superfluid, well, we would have absolutely no way to detect it. It would be inside of our particles. It would be inside of our cells. It would be inside of our eye. It would be inside of everything. It would be the fucking force or chi or these things that have existed in occultism for, you know, centuries. Well, there's this idea out there scantly in modern physics that there perhaps is this superfluid. The idea of bee theory is that various scientists throughout human history have discovered how to influence this superfluid and have made various technologies from it. And that a lot of the conspiracies we attribute to, you know, secret societies and things, the Arrow clubs, these secret schools of the Egyptian priests, a lot of that was to protect this very valuable knowledge. It was this hidden modal of physics alongside gravity and magnetism that is one of these essential invisible forces. And interestingly enough, there is a Russian scientist who died in 2001 who claimed to have built a UFO-like craft based off of the hard shells of insects. He was an entomologist, and he wrote his real dude, real respected Russian scientist. He solved all kinds of like alfalfa pest problems, and he was really well versed in the migratory. He saved this migration of dung beetles, a bunch of weird stuff. But he was like, and also I built this UFO once using bug parts, and I had to put it away because all this weird paranormal creepy shit happened. And so I was willing to dismiss it at first because I was like, okay, sure, dude.
But, I saw Starship Troopers too, dude.
Yeah, I was like, whatever, sure. But the list of paranormal shit he described happening was a mirror list to the psychedelic paranormal connection that I had written in my first book. Like, he was talking about weird missing time and like the time-space elements and disappearing, reappearing objects, phantom voices, like all kinds of paranormal stuff that lined up also with psychedelic experiences. He was basically saying operating this craft and any location where you operate it frequently is inundated with a bunch of weird psychedelic paranormal side effects because of this effect in the quantum fluid. And he didn't make that connection in his research, but there are several other scientists who came, a few before him, including a German guy who was connected to the infamous Nazi Bell Project, who claimed to have discovered a different thing studying the flow of rivers, but a similar concept. And a couple modern people who have discovered similar things. One founded a company where they created a generator, and they just disappeared. They like demoed this generator twice. It worked completely without any plugins or whatever. It created a positive charge. Like, you could like power several high powered lights with it. It was completely freestanding, free energy device. And then after these demos, their company just vanished. No one knows where they're at or whatever.
Right, it's next to all the Tesla papers right now.
Well, it's Wilhelm Reich again was one of these dudes. Speaking of Tesla, everyone knows him as well. Stole all of his shit. But Wilhelm Reich was another dude, a contemporary of Jung. He studied under Freud in the same class. I think Jung was top of the class, Reich was second. He went on to develop a lot about sexual theory that's still used in modern this is
Orgonite today. Right, an orgone,
but yeah, he's more famous in the new AIDS community as the orgone guy. But the ATF arrested him and took all of his devices, locked them up in storage, and they've never been seen again. So the orgone pyramids we get today are completely that's my number one CIA psyop. They made that shit up because they don't want anyone recreating the actual orgone accumulators because they fucking worked.
And he made cloudbusters out of those too, I think, where they would like right? point the orgone at the sky and make it rain or the opposite. I
shit you not, the Viktor Gorbinikov, the Russian scientist, he built a bunch of craft off the same, you know, insect theory, and they look. A bunch of the devices look exactly like the fucking Cloudbuster, and they would do the same shit. And this is a dude on the other side of the globe in Siberia who discovered it through bugs. Reich claimed to discover it through sex, which he was a horny dude, but an orgasm would have these medical effects, and sitting in these shaped devices that could flow his orgone energy certain ways would have these medical effects. Gorbinikov ended up using the same thing for what he called the cavity structure effect. And it was this special magnetic effect connected to his UFO device. But this is a known and understood scientific, like, special electromagnetic field that specifically applies to insect nests. But anything that has a repeated cavity, so like a bundle of straws or the Cloudbuster from Wilhelm Reich. Again, it's a bunch of like PVC pipes bunched up and pointing in one direction. And the Strausberg, the dude in Germany connected to the Bell Project, there's still a organization that has, continues his research to this day, and their main thing is medical devices. And they're like,
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yeah, I know about them.
No, they're actually, they're like, at the start of their website, there's like a huge disclaimer saying, legally, we're not saying this can be used instead of a vaccine, but this can definitely be used instead of a vaccine.
Like Q-tip. Don't put this in your ear.
Use our weird German superfluid technology. It will cure you. It's very suspect. It is weird. But all of these scientists say that this device, their new modem of physics, has this medical application. And there's, interestingly enough, a lot of modern research, specifically into CSE, that says that the medical applications of it prove superfluid, because there's no way that it would be magnetism. There's no way that it would be like holding a wasp nest shouldn't vibrate your insides, but it does, is what they're saying, basically. And so it supports this idea of a super fluid hypothesis. And I think perhaps very similar to the Manhattan Project in the early 1900s, where everyone, it was a secret, but everyone knew we were building an atomic weapon because all of the atomic scientists went missing. You know what I mean? Like, all suddenly you couldn't go to a university and take atomic science because that dude was fucking working on the project. And it seems that something similar has happened with these superfluid researchers, that they're just fucking gone. Like, anytime they make any kind of big breakthrough, there's this weird radio silence afterwards. And at the same time, the government, there's a massive increase in these craft all over the globe. And the government's, you know, saying, oh yeah, no, it's aliens. Sure, it's aliens. Just like those gorillas that flew those fighter jets. And so I think, wow, there is a paranormal UFO experience, that a lot of the current UFO out there are craft designed and piloted by people that cause a bunch of weird psychedelic side effects just by being in their vicinity, which is why they're unlikely to cop to it, because, you know, lawsuits.
Dude, I love this. I think this is a good place to wrap up a little bit here. I want to give you a chance to tell people where to find you again. Is there a name for the book that you've been throwing around? You don't got to commit to it. I'm just curious what the name.
Still in the works right now. It's still going to be B-Theory and then some kind of clever subtitle. But if you're waiting in anticipation, you can check out my other two books, A Place Between Time and Space, which is about the Betts case here in Florida. A haunted house with a UFO inside of it. It's the weirdest fucking story, and it's the weirdest home, certainly in this part of the world. I'm gonna give it that big, because it's fucking bizarre. And I went in there and investigated this abandoned structure. And it's north of Jacksonville. I'll give you the deets. It's this local urban legend, and it is one of the bizarrest homes I've ever seen. It's, again, I go to a bunch of places, and most of them are like, meh. This one has that. It's something strange. Literally built on a Native American fucking shell midden. It's it's all the stereotypes. And then in the 70s, there was a metal sphere that the family found, and it moved around on its own inside the house. It's just this window into high strangeness. And then my first book, Paranormal Expeditions, Hunt for the Friendship. That was a case I did in Chile in South America, where I did a bunch of weird psychedelic experiments and went down to Patagonia to try to find this supposed group of extraterrestrials. I found some Nazis and some weird stories instead. yeah, some remnants, you know, ancestors, I would say. I won't paint them as current Nazis, but some suspicious shit was definitely going down. But yeah, check out all that stuff. You can find links to all of that at chazofthedead.com. And you can find me at Chaz of the Dead on all the social medias. And be sure to check out Paranormality Magazine as well, where you can find articles not only for myself, but all kinds of creators from the paranormal world, ghost hunters, Bigfoot hunters, UFO, ufologists, oopologists. I don't know what they want to be called anymore. Whatever it is, though, that you can get your paranormal itch scratched over there. So check them out as well. And yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man, we got to do this again. There's more topics that we have to get into. And definitely check out the Paranormality Magazine. And I think you even had homie Juan on the cover on one of those as Florida's homunculologist.
Absolutely.
Right? So if you want to know more about, you know, Juan's work into homunculology, which is a real thing now, we're making it, this is like a thought form that we're just creating into the world.
It's been printed. It's real now.
It's real now. So, you know, stop fighting it, guys. Homunculus is real.
We're going to start creating our own homunculuses. It's only a matter of time.
Well, speaking of, oh man, do I have one on me? Yeah.
Oh, you're going to show me a jar full of cum.
No, not yet. This tells you how to make your own jar full of, you know, fun sunstone. We're gonna call it sunstone.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this is the full manual of the how to make a homunculus, and I've got a little commercial that I'll lead you off with right now.
They said it was forbidden. They said it was dangerous. They were right. Introducing the Paranoid American Homunculus Owner's Manual. Dive into the arcane, into the hidden corners of the occult. This isn't just a comic. It's a hidden tome of supernatural power. All original artwork illustrating the groundbreaking research of Juan Ayala, one of the only living homunculologists of our time. Learn how to summon your own homunculus, an enigma wrapped in the fabric of reality itself, their power at your fingertips, their existence, your secret. Explore the mysteries of the Aristotelian, the spiritual, the Paracelsian, the Crowleyan homunculus, ancient knowledge lost to time, now unearthed in this forbidden tale. This comic book holds truths not meant for the light of day, knowledge that was buried, feared, and shunned. Are you ready to uncover the hidden? The Paranoid American Homunculus Owner's Manual, not for the faint of heart. Available now from Paranoid American. Get your copy at tjojp.com or paranoidamerican.com today.